And now some thoughts on the national pastime of India. And it's not the million-dollar arms of baseball. More like this.
In the air, Srishant takes it! India win! Unbelievable scenes here at the ball.
That's right, more like this. The pastime I'm thinking of scores numbers approaching Indian World Cup champion cricket. 1 billion people watched the last India versus Pakistan contest. But no, I'm talking about something else. I'm talking about the national pastime of Indian politics. 550 million people in India made it to the polls in the longest and best-financed democratic election in the history of India. It represents a voter turnout of more than 66%, a record for India, and a higher turnout for any democracy in the world where voting isn't compulsory. Only South Africa at 73%, Malaysia at 84%, and Kenya at almost 86% top India's turnout. It's also above the paltry 57.5% turnout in the USA in 2012. But the scale of India's achievement puts it in a class by itself. Since the last election in 2009, India's electorate grew by 100 million, which is a pair of South Africa's, or four Australia's. The number of people who didn't go to the polls in India in 2014 just about equals the entire population of the United States, 318 million. To get such an election in the books, you need, first of all, 5 weeks. Then you need 930,000 polling booths, 2 million voting machines, 15,000 liters of indelible ink to mark voters' fingers. By the way, that much ink will fit nicely into a small tanker truck. A couple more numbers here. The losing Indian National Congress Party vote tally is estimated at about double the 65 million people who voted for Barack Obama last time. And the estimated tally for the winning BJP party easily exceeds the total numbers of votes cast for Barack Obama, Mitt Romney, and the also-rans. One more thing. To carry out such an exercise of democracy and to prevent violence and fraud, you hire 11 million poll workers, 8 million of whom are security guards, which, by the way, is about the population of New York City. No, that's not cricket. It's politics, Indian style and Indian scale. And it goes today by the name of the new Indian leader from the BJP, Narendra Modi. Joining me now from the ground in New Delhi is Ellen Berry, New York Times India Bureau Chief. Welcome, Ellen.
Thank you.
Narendra Modi called this a victory for India today, is it?
Certainly, this was a vast election. It went off mostly without violence. And I think you can say today that a very clear message was sent by the population.
Is he a unifying force within India? And is he the kind of leader who will really be on the global stage as well as being a politician within India?
He's a very different kind of leader than India has had for the last decade. That's for sure. He's a conservative nationalist, comes out of a Hindu nationalist movement, basically, and has certainly turned away from the kind of welfare-based leftist politics of the Indian National Congress, which has ruled India for almost all of its post-independence history.
Would you say there's a market orientation for Modi, and what would that consist of in emerging India's economy?
He certainly has a lot of supporters and advisors who hope that he will be the Margaret Thatcher of India. The more complicated side and the controversial side of his history is that very early on, when he first took over the state, he was the leader of Gujarat during the worst religious riots to occur since independence. About 1,000 people were killed, and many people, particularly Muslims, but others as well, believe that he didn't take the steps that he could have to stop the violence. So that shadow has really followed him up until this day. But I think the message of this vote is that that history didn't matter to Indians. They viewed him as a development man, as a good governance person who would rebuild the economy, and that overwhelmed all other considerations.
That shadow that followed him, it is very interesting that it doesn't cast him at all as a sectarian leader. There's really an absence of that kind of language, both in this campaign and from the rhetoric from the BJP these days.
For the most part, absolutely, he avoided making any openly divisive comments. And he has generally done so during the 12 years since the riots. But Mr. Modi has certainly chosen the markets and development as his persona. And that has been accepted by almost all of the voters that I interacted with.
Two things before we go. Number one, this really pushes the fringe parties that are used to being kingmakers in India way into the background. And any sense of Modi's relationships with other regional leaders and members of the G7 even?
This is a remarkable win for Modi. I don't think practically anyone expected him to do as well as he's done, particularly the Indian National Congress, which knew that they were headed for a loss and with some equanimity were preparing to be in the opposition. But this is an overwhelming landslide when it looks like the BJP is going to have enough seats to form a government independently without any coalition partners. That means the regional heavyweights are out of luck, even though a couple of them did very well. They're used to having an enormous amount of leverage over the central government, and that won't be true.
And what about Modi's relationship with other leaders in the region and among the G7 countries?
Modi has certainly projected the intention to make India into a strong, respected regional power. You hear a great deal about returning India to its past glory. And a lot of this is expressed in a kind of muscular stance. What that is going to mean is unclear. There have been some noises from Pakistan that they view him as a hardliner, potentially as a Nixon in China figure who might be able to reopen negotiations over Kashmir simply because he doesn't have to worry about being criticized from the right flank. He has generally turned east. All of his early travels were to east to South Asia, and he is said to have been very powerfully impressed by the national models in South Asia. He is clearly very impressed with Chinese and the Chinese scale mega projects because he has emulated that style in Gujarat. And because he faced so much opprobrium from the West over the Gujarat riots, I think there is a lot of baggage that will have to be worked out between him and the Western market democracies. However, as a relatively pragmatic leader who has really staked his success on economic growth, I think he's going to be thinking of investment first and foremost. So a will and probably a way to rebuild those relationships.
On the line from Delhi, Ellen Berry is the South Asia Bureau Chief for our partner, The New York Times. Thanks, Ellen.
Thank you.
This is Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, the Science Friday team has been reporting high-quality science and technology news, making science fun for curious people by covering everything from the outer reaches of space to the rapidly changing world of AI to the tiniest microbes in our bodies. Audiences trust our show because they know we're driven by a mission to inform and serve listeners first and foremost with important news they won't get anywhere else. And our sponsors benefit from that halo effect. For more information on becoming a sponsor, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.